This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 31. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-323-97543.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, welcome back, Berners. You've been on your travels?
A few travels and just generally hitting centuries around the United Kingdom. So, yeah, a return to form, and we've been out and about with a few customers of late. It's that time of the year where the schools have broken up. So there's lots of kind of private academies which are taking place, and some have dipped into the world of Pitch Vision to drive a new exciting angle for these courses. So I've been out and about with some of those. Yeah, it's been fun, good weather, and been enjoying it.
Well, we've only got half an hour on this show, so unfortunately you can't talk us through it.
Yeah, at least I'm not getting zero anymore.
But I am.
You are, Garrus. There you go.
Garrus, what's happened?
I played on Saturday. We had Sports Fest at Wormsley on possibly the flattest wicket in the history of the world. And I watched Andrew Strauss, Martin Johnson, and a couple of others smash it everywhere. And then I went into bat with one run needed, facing tennis player Tim Henman, who trapped me LBW second ball.
Did he serve it or bowl it?
He bowled it, mate, and first one went down leg side, and actually it should have been a wide, and we'd have won the game, which would have saved my blushes. However, the next one, apparently on Hawkeye, was just clipping the outside of leg stump. So Tim was very happy, as was Will Greenwood, who was at Silly Point at the time, and Austin Healy, who escorted me back to the pavilion by punching me in the ribs. So it was all good fun. I've got a couple of war medals, and I didn't even get anywhere near any of the balls.
One thing I wanted to talk about this week was to do with young players and young players going into adult cricket, because that's always a tricky one to judge, isn't it, Garrus? When is a youngster ready to take the step up and play in senior cricket? So what are your thoughts on that? How do you judge whether a youngster is ready to make the step into adult cricket, because it varies so greatly, doesn't it?
It does, and I think there's two questions. I think this is a brilliant question, but I also think there's another one that comes off of the back of it. So to me, I'd rather play them slightly too early than I would slightly too late, but I think the key thing is how you deploy them. And I think this is, we've talked about Sunday cricket, haven't we? Friendly cricket and social cricket on a Sunday is so important for the youngsters, because they can go up and play in slightly less competitive situations and also get an opportunity to bat up the order a little bit or bowl, higher up the bowling order a little bit. And that works really well. And certainly as a young player coming through, and at Ventnor where I'm playing this afternoon, you know, they've had a great history in providing opportunity for youngsters using those friendly formats to give them that starting point, to give them an opportunity in not necessarily a sort of win or die situation. You know, it's I think that's really, really important. And we've talked about Sunday cricket and how important that is a lot of times on this show. The other thing to me is then if you are playing them in competitive cricket, again, is how you deploy them. And I go back to the Australians of the 1980s, 1990s, whenever they used to bring in a young player, unless they were a specialist opening batter, they would bat them around six. Five or six, and even the greats or people that turned into greats like Ricky Ponting would start off in that position and then get some experience, bat around some senior professionals, you know, the likes of David Boone, Jeff Marsh, Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, learn their trade and then find the position that they're going to end up being in, on a permanent basis. Similarly, you know, bringing somebody in to bowl seamers. You bowl them first change, you allow them to get into the game early, but you've also got those senior guys to work around. And I think it's the same in club cricket as it is in test cricket. And certainly the best adaptations for youngsters have come when a club has thought about it carefully and sort of mixed and matched the experiences they get between competitive and non-competitive cricket, and also what positions that they bowl and bat in.
Yeah, once you've got the safety issue out of the way, is this youngster going to be, you know, not going to be afraid of the ball if it's struck firmly to them and they're fielding it mid on? Once you're through that, then it then becomes a matter of building up experience, really, then, doesn't it?
Absolutely right, and you've got to take that safety element into it. And I think, as you quite rightly say, I think fielding's the one, isn't it? Because batting wise, although it can be a bit daunting facing an adult as a young player, you know, we've got good protective kit now. Everybody wears a helmet. You know, you can have chest pads and whatever the case may be on. And whilst it still hurts, you know, you're not going to be in any real significant danger. It's as you say, that one at mid-on when an adult and a big, strong adult hits one at you. And I remember wearing a couple, not dropping too many, but certainly when it was hit along the ground, being rushed a bit in my early days of playing senior cricket. And again, you can put people in slightly lower traffic areas, can't you, or positions where the ball is less likely to be coming at a rapid rate or not. So you can think about that. And I think this is where the captain comes into play around fielding positions. But yeah, just careful. Just think about it, because, you know, we want these kids to be playing. We want them to be picking up the experience of playing around senior players. We've talked about that a lot on this show, and the captain plays an incredibly important role in the in that. And I was lucky as a youngster coming up playing with some great captains, and similarly some of the other guys that came through my club at Ventnor, including somebody like Danny Briggs, also benefited from having people that were very careful with the way that they developed these cricketers.
Berners, what are your experiences of coming through the ranks as a youngster?
Yeah, exactly what Gary said. A few tour games playing. We had a team at my side called the Sunday Stragglers, who were, you know, a team who were put together, and you had all sorts. But for me, it was, learning about the speed of the ball and playing with bigger men. And then when you went to go back and play against people around your own age group, you know, they couldn't hit the ball as hard, they couldn't bowl as fast, and you do develop and learn far quicker. For me as well, given my character and outlook on life, it was more than just cricket. You know, being with guys who were at times above the age of 18 had some quite fascinating and exciting things to tell me off the park, and I felt that I kind of I grew up on a cricket field. And my first memories of being out in a kind of social way was with guys who I'd played cricket with. So you learn a lot from playing and doing with guys that are slightly older, well, adults, I guess. But, I had the odd bruise back then. I can remember that. I used to be quite scared. Helmets weren't rife back in the day then. They used to kind of fear for your life, really. But, I guess nowadays, like Gareth says, you've got all the equipment. These kids are tip to toe in equipment, so they're not too worried about actually batting. It's more the fielding side. The high catches as well. Suddenly getting underneath the sky when you're 10, 11 years old, it's quite a daunting prospect.
That is true. I think the coaching of younger players, when you've got equipment like the Skyer bats, which can hit the ball quite a long way up in the air, I think that's helping younger players get the idea that they're going to be under a high ball every now and again, and that they don't have to necessarily be intimidated by it because they've practiced it with a coach with a baseball mitt knocking one pretty high up in the air. You can get plenty of hang time, Garrers, on using a Skyer, can't you?
Yeah, not too bad with that bit of kit, mate. It's something I really enjoy. And equally, of course, you know, you don't have to bang brand new cricket balls up in the air. You can use Incrediballs, you can use the hard tennis balls, just to get people used to it and then progress them towards the cricket ball. So even our under-13s at school, under-14s at school are catching, you know, good height of Skyers, but not necessarily using that really hard ball initially, just to build up their confidence, and then you can take them through it. But I think we're better, aren't we, now at challenging young players, whereas years ago, there wasn't much science or understanding of how to challenge young players, and it was done on a big sort of an ad hoc basis, whereas, you know, the coaching fraternities around the world are far more educated now, and so young players are being exposed to these environments and tougher environments. So when they do go into men's cricket, it's not quite such as a bigger jump as it used to be when maybe we did it.
Okay, let's finish off this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more we want to say. And Berners, you're back in charge of the questions this week.
I am indeed. And the first question is, Ravindra Jadeja's rise to ODI number one status shows mastering the basics is more important than mystery spin.
Yes.
Yes.
Question two, eventually the World Test Championship will rival the Ashes in popularity.
No.
No.
Question three, you always need variety in a bowling attack.
Yes.
Boringly, I'm going to say yes. That's the same again. We're the same again. We need to get more contentious.
We need more contentious questions.
Is David Warner going to feature in this year's Christmas pantomimes?
Okay, it's time to find out what's pressing in our listeners' minds with the mailbag. We've got two questions, coaching questions that hopefully we can answer, and the best of those wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, what is the first question you got this week?
Our first question is from Amar, and he's wondering, what is the best way to bat against a bowler on a seaming wicket? Is it to take guard 2 feet outside or to stay very deep and bat like trot and play late on back?
I'm kind of assuming he's meaning standing 2 feet outside the crease rather than 2 feet outside leg stump.
I think he's definitely getting closer to the ball, yeah.
Well, it's a brilliant question. I have to say, when I saw this one come through, I'm quite excited about this straight away. And you know, the seaming ball, I think, is the most difficult ball to face because it does it so late, you know, whereas it's rare and, you know, there are only a very few exponents of it in the world that can get the ball to swing as late as that. But generally, the ball will swing prior to the ball bouncing. Whereas when it seams, obviously, you know, the ball can move very quickly from a very full length, and that's what makes it so tricky. The bottom line is that both of those two things can work. I would say it's slightly easier to use your feet and get down the pitch when the ball is swinging than it is when it's seaming. But I have seen it work really well. And going back to Kevin Peterson, he's somebody that as soon as the ball moves laterally, he will look to get down the pitch to take that distance that the ball can move laterally out of the equation and get as close to the ball bounce as possible. So I've seen that work. I think it works for people that generally can control the ball further away in front of themselves, like a KP can do. So if you're one of those guys, it's very much worth experimenting with that technique because you're probably going to be more akin to doing that than people that need to play the ball late, as per a Jonathan Trott. Now, most of us need to play the ball late. So therefore, staying back and letting the ball come all the way and letting the ball almost finish its seam movement is a very good option. And that's something that Trotty is mastered. I think Ian Bell does it pretty well as well, letting the ball come all the way. And you'll see them, rather than KP, go towards the ball and try and limit the distance. They'll try to increase it so they can let the ball do its movement. The crucial thing with any lateral movement is that you hold the line of the shot that you're playing. And I think any bowler will tell you that when a batter's hands gets drawn with the movement, then they think their slips are in play. So if a ball does go, if you can remember back to a Marcus Triscothic, he would play the line, and if it deviated, he wouldn't follow it. He'd just keep his bat there, wouldn't get drawn into the shot, and as a result, would play and miss quite a lot, but actually would survive in some quite tricky batting conditions. So there's no one way or the other, but if you play the ball out in front of you, If you're somebody who hits more like Kevin Peterson than a Jonathan Trott, then certainly coming down the wicket and taking the distance that the ball can move laterally out of the equation is a really good option. If you're more like the rest of us, which is, I'd say, 2/3 of the population probably, then playing the ball late and playing the ball straight and holding the line of a bat holding the line of the ball with your bat, and if it goes past, then so be it, is a really good option.
And playing the ball late doesn't necessarily mean standing deep in your crease either. You can stay where you are and still play late.
Yeah, absolutely. When I say playing the ball late, we normally talk about that as playing the ball as close to your eyes as possible. So if there's a plumb line, you know, if you've got a plumb line hanging down from the middle of your, between your eyes, then trying to play the ball as late as possible, which is what Trotty does. But what Trotty does as well is he exaggerates that by staying a bit deeper in the crease when the ball's moving around laterally, so he can let the deviation do all of its lateral movement before he plays it or before he leaves it.
And the key with this, just like with all batting really, is to be well balanced and as much as possible well aligned to the line of the ball.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's difficult, isn't it? When the ball moves late, to retain your balance is a really difficult thing. And that's why seam movement, to me, is incredibly dangerous. You know, if you can get the ball to move about on the seam and you find the conditions that suit a seam bowler that can hold the seam up, then it is difficult to retain your balance because the ball's moving in the last few feet of its journey rather than moving from all the way from the hand. So it's a real challenge, but it's one that if you get through, then it gives you a hell of a lot of satisfaction. And you know people do get through them. If you remember back to the no ball test match that Pakistan England won, where it was as green as anything, and the match fixing, you know, the spot fixing test match, the ball nipped about all over the place, but Jonathan Trott and then Matthew Prior and Brodie stuck to their guns. And generally, even if the ball's nipping around, bowlers can't sustain hitting the right areas for hour after hour after hour. And at some stage, if you stick in there hard enough, you'll start to get their rhythm off. The ball will get a little bit softer. The seam will get a bit softer. The overhead conditions might change. And then all of a sudden, batting becomes a lot easier. And that's exactly what happened in that test match. So England were right up against it. And Brodie got 150 in no time because he saw it out. And then when the bowler's tired and the ball got softer, he made hay.
That's right. You've got to remember that, you know, half volleys and long hops still happen even when conditions are in the bowler's favour.
Yeah, and particularly a half volley, because you know when the ball is seaming around, you want to be getting the ball up there as much as possible to make that movement later. But equally, the margin of error from a bowler hitting just full of a length, which induces an edge or makes it difficult, to bowling a genuine full half volley is a very small margin. So it doesn't mean to say you can't score at all. But it's all about method, and what I like about the way that KP goes about it is he's very much working with what he's got and finding his method. And then equally, Trotty, on the other hand, who's completely and utterly different, has found a method to be able to deal with that seaming ball again. And this is where we talk about practice. You know, get yourself on a wicket that does a bit, or maybe, you know, get a couple of your old practice balls and pick the seam a bit, and get somebody to bowl at you with a pick seam ball, so every time it hits the rope, it does a little bit. That's the way to really practice it, because the last thing you want to do is get out into the middle on a Saturday after having two nets in a net with you know, rough old balls that aren't going to do anything, and all of a sudden the ball starts darting around. So again, it goes back to that preparation that we talk about every week. Challenge yourself, you know, get your fingers or a knife underneath a seam, and let's get the thing going sideways in practice.
I was going to say it's a tough one to practice, especially if you look at the way that traditionally you might be practicing indoors before the start of the season, and then the ball's going to be seeming about early season as a general rule. But you've been playing on flat indoor wickets where you can hit through the line no problem. So that's where you have to get creative.
You do, and you know, you can really make balls stand up, seams on balls stand up, even the rough ones, you know, the ones that you just use as a throw-down ball. And, you know, obviously we're not advocating doing this in matches, but certainly in your preparation, get a knife out, pull up that seam, you know, get it all nice and sharp again, like a brand new ball, and give that a go. And also, you know, if you're in an indoor hall and it seems too much problem to get to, or too much of a hassle to get the mats out every now and again, you know, I sometimes put two mats on top of each other just to slow up the ball bounce and to give the seam something to work against in indoor facilities, just to redress that balance between bat and ball. Because it, as you quite rightly say, when you get outside in the first couple of weeks of a season, wherever you're playing in the world, the ball's likely to stay in the pitch a bit longer and do something, rather than the indoor floors where you can just hit through.
Our next question comes in from Imran. He is a 16-year-old fast bowler, and he's asking how he can get the seam position straight. Is there any particular drill for doing that? And he's saying that he's been practicing so much, but he still can't get the seam coming out straight. Very frustrating for a seam bowler when the seam's not coming out straight. So I'm sure the guys have got some ideas for you, Imran.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine it is. It's when you have a problem that you just can't get your head around, it's extremely frustrating, because you know you don't know where to turn. You feel like you've tried everything, and yet the problem still exists. I think for me, seam position is more of a consequence than something in itself. It's a consequence of getting everything in the right position all the way through the action until the ball comes out of the ends of your fingers with the seam in an upright position.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you stole the words out of my mouth there, to be honest. It is generally something that's happened before you get back to that release position. So, you know, have a look. Again, we talk about it, but get yourself on video. Is your body, you know, pretty upright at ball release? If it's not, then track it back to what's causing that. Because if you get your body more upright, then your wrist position, which is what most people and many coaches would focus on here, would say, oh, you know, you need to really work on your wrist position. But if the body's not supporting that wrist, then it's going to be offset, and as a result your seam's going to be offset. So I'd have a look at that first and foremost. If that is absolutely spot on, you know, if you're comfortable with your body action and how you're standing up at the crease, then it is worthwhile doing some drills where you literally just flick the ball out of your wrist. So you hold your elbow and just flick the ball out of your wrist over 5 or 6 yards to a partner or into the wall to see how the seam's going down. If you can't see the seam particularly, because sometimes old balls you can't see it, get a bit of white tape or a colour that stands out, put it around the seam, and then throw that, and then you'll get an indicator to see how that's going down. Just flick it out and then start to bowl it out, and again track that seam position. But that's, you know, that's rare that it is a wrist issue. It's normally what happens beneath. But as I say, if you get to the point where your action's spot on, then you can start to do those drills just to really sort of make fine adjustments. And then there's a fantastic, you know, I'm because you're listening to this on the internet, there's a fantastic bowling resource where Jimmy Anderson, if you go to YouTube, Jimmy Anderson's talking through his variations. And when you get to that point where your action's spot on, go to that, listen to Jimmy talk about all of his different variations and how subtle they are, and also have a look at his wrist positions, because on that he talks about times where his wrist position hasn't been spot on and what he has done to get that wrist position absolutely right, to be able to make the ball talk in the way that we've seen him do over the last 2 years. But completely agree with your initial point, but just give a little bit of extra. So get on the internet and have a look at Jimmy Anderson.
And it takes a long time as well. I mean, Jimmy is the perfect example of that. You know, it took him a long time to settle into something where he mastered, and he's really only mastered that kind of thing in the last couple of years, although he's had the potential for a very long time since he first came on the scene all that time ago. But it's not something where, you know, you pop down, do a couple of drills for a couple of weeks, and then suddenly everything is exceptionally perfect. It's something which takes a long time to master. Especially what I was going to say about wrist position and how wrist position can vary between different types of bowlers. If you've got a lower arm, then your wrist position is going to be different from if you've got a higher arm. But but which makes it harder to control the ball. But you can still get a good wrist position if you understand. You still get a good seam position if you understand the way that your body is moving through space.
You know, we've talked about Malinga a lot, haven't we? But Malinga is a different bowler to Jimmy, so he comes with that lower arm. And as a result, with a new ball, he swings the ball away because his wrist works very, very well for an away swinger because it's on the right-hand side of a ball generally. So it helps to set up that seam position to get the ball to go away with a conventionally swinging ball. And then equally, when it comes to reverse swing, it's set up again to get the other side of a ball doing what it should be. So there's a classic contrast between two guys. Jimmy Anderson, who can go in and out because he's a bit more over the top and therefore his variations can be quite subtle. And then somebody who, like Malinga, whose variations aren't particularly subtle, but he's mastered three or four ball types. And in particular, he's a way swinger to right-handers with the new ball and his in-swinger reversing back into the stumps for right-handers. So, you know, it comes down to that mastery thing. And mastery, as we all know, takes a heck of a lot of time. And both of those two guys are great examples of people that have been patient and their coaches have been patient with them, and look at the results they get now.
Berners, what do you think about wrist position and seam position?
You know, a lot of people say you can adapt when you bat, and you adapt in a lot of sports, but I think something like that with the wrist position is almost a law of science, right? That your wrist has to actually push something and be straight, and everything has to go in a straight lines to get that ball out straight. That be fair comment?
Yeah, there are different kinds of bowling actions, but ultimately, in the years gone by, we've always concentrated on the wrist, and we've all as seamers, and I used to be a seamer before I started to keep wicket, but we've all been advised to get your wrist behind the ball, but often it's not quite as simple as that, because the reason why the wrist isn't behind the ball isn't because of a wrist, it's that's just a consequence of what's going on underneath. So to go back to David's original point, the crucial thing is to have a look at your action before you look at your wrist. So we could give you a magic drill that gets your wrist in the right place, but actually until you get the action sorted, it doesn't matter how good you get at that particular drill, it's not going to have any sort of functional benefit when you're actually bowling. So first things first, look at your action, see the positions that you're getting yourself into, get that spot on, get that robust, and then you can start tinkering around with the Jimmy Anderson stuff, which is on YouTube, and have a look at that.
Yeah, that's the crucial thing. As much as we talk about, you know, there's key indicators of a bowling action which show you whether someone is producing the maximum pace or the maximum accuracy, there are large variations in bowling actions, and you've got to work within your own body to get the most out of it. You have to have an understanding of what the quote-unquote perfect bowling action looks like, but you also have to have an understanding of how not everybody will fit into that template and how you need to work around with your own body to do it. So, yeah, I think, Imran, that's maybe not the answer that you were looking for. Probably looking for try this drill, and in 2 weeks you'll be playing international cricket. Maybe not, but have a good understanding of your action and have a look at yourself on video is a really key aspect. Or even someone that you trust, if you can't have access to video, if you haven't got a smartphone or anything, then have someone who you trust look at your action and see where you can make steady improvements to that position.
Ask your keeper.
Yeah,
your keeper gets a really good view on it, and the best bowling coach, that a guy called Mark Robinson, who's Sussex's head coach now, ever had, was Peter Moores, and not when he was coaching, but when he was keeping wicket to him. So yeah, ask your keeper; they get a really good feel for what you're doing. They understand your action, and they can give you some great feedback.
Okay, let's head to the Pitch Vision headlines now. In the newsroom, waiting for us is Daisy Cutter.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. A new feature in Pitch Vision's PV video is assisting coaches to help prevent chucking. Previously, grassroots bowlers have never had a way to measure the maximum allowed 15 degree elbow angle. A new PV video report gives players access to the information during net practice. Coaches are already getting to work helping youngsters. There is a race on at Pitch Vision Interactive to be the next player to 100 runs on the system. Users Sean50 and Ornsby in the UK sit on 98 runs each. Ashutoff 1-2 in India is just one hit away on 96. ECB performance programme coach Ian Brunchweiler wrapped up filming with Pitch Vision this week. The author of the Inspire Cricket Manual will be launching his new online coaching course in the next few weeks. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Well, seeing as Berners is back from his travels, it's only right that he should regale us with a tale or two within 60 seconds of what's been going on. So, Berners, it's time for your soapbox. 60 seconds, over to you.
As ever with my soapbox, it relates to an issue which reared its head throughout playing these last few weeks, but it's this week it's about practicing as you play. And of late I've been watching my own team play and the youngsters, how they're getting out and the sorts of bowling they're coming up against, you know, on the weekend, and the style in which they find ways to get out. And I think it all stems from taking it back a level. The way they practice is built in a way that they want to practice, so in a way in which they enjoy facing bowlers which aren't testing them. We actually had an interesting piece in the show earlier on about making things difficult. Pick the ball, use an old ball or even a new ball in training. So many times I'm going to training these days and guys there on the bowling machine thumping back half volleys, go out into the middle of the park on a Saturday, little green seamer, 60-year-old dog, just moving it away from them. They follow it, nick off, good night, Vienna. So get in the nets, face the old timer, and do stuff that you do on a Saturday afternoon in the nets.
Okay, well, that's the end of another cracking Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. Just a couple of little bits of housekeeping before we head off into the sunset. Gareth has got his drive his camper van off into the sunset. It's nice there, Gareth, at the moment, is it?
It is, yes.
To drive into.
Lots of sunshine for the next 3 days, mate, so that's good. I've got a game, going to have to put a bit of sun cream on the old bald head today, this afternoon. Not to bat, I won't be out there long enough, but I'm sure I'll be in the field for a bit longer.
Yeah, don't worry, mate, there won't have any tennis players going.
You can relax.
Mate, it wouldn't matter what they were.
School teachers, you have too much time off anyway.
Well, before we get into that, let's decide on a winner for this week's prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had a Mars question regarding playing seaming wickets, and we had Imran's question on drills for seam position. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Amar this week. I thought it was a great question. Really, really good. Keep those quality questions coming in, because it always provokes good answers. Well, not necessarily good answers, but good discussion.
Yeah, good discussion. And it's also good for sending in the question, because you win that prize. So congratulations. You can choose something suitable to help you improve your game. Now, Berners, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show, send in their question, maybe win a prize, maybe just have a chat with us, how would they do that?
They can call us on our new telephone number, which is 00023975 43.
Yep.
Or they can drop us an email, and it's coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Twitter is available at PV Cricket Coach. And so is Facebook. If you head over to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, you can find us posting videos, chatting about things there, discussing many a coaching issue. And if you want to listen to this show every week, then you can do. Just head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us in there. Click the subscribe button. If you want to subscribe in any other way, it's completely free, of course. Then you can do so by heading over to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link. You've got the RSS feed details in there for any other podcatching program. So until then, until next week, see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, all.